kids. It's time to get some SML podcast all up in that.
What's up, everyone? This is the SML Podcast. I'm your host, Joe. We have a lot of reviews to take care of this episode. We're starting things off the way we usually do. Pernell Vaughn, you're here. How are you?
I think it's hilarious that we have a ton of reviews to cover. We started early, and then we just rambled before hitting record. And then I was like, how you doing, Pernell? I'm like, I got nothing to say. I'm used to it.
I went through my rambles. You should have recorded earlier.
Everything was ready to go.
I don't know what to say anymore.
The mailman dropped off my package at the wrong house. Crazy shit.
Really?
No, but I made that one up. Oh. But the point is, it could have been in the sizzle. It could have been a part of the sizzle. I don't think I had any like negative things happen. Worst case scenario is like I'm broke because I went to PAX and bought way too many board games because I'm a sucker for stress buying and board games because I love them. And then I get home, and then cool stuff, things like everything on the site's also awesome. Like, you sons of bitches, I just bought you. Why are you doing this to me? And one of the games that I wanted to get the show that wasn't there, they have it on the site, on sale. I'm sure you have friends like this, like me, but people who tend to buy games because they like getting good deals on stuff, but they have enough. They got plenty. And it takes like they need like a goddamn support group to come in like, all right, Pernell, you're covered. You don't need any more. Name the 5 games you're playing right now. Dragon Quest. When did you buy that? September. Exactly. Don't buy anything else. Right. Let me stop right now. I'm still playing Dragon Quest 11. I do not need Super Smash Brothers, but I'm still going to buy it.
See, I don't have friends like that. I am that friend.
See, there you go. You're doing a public service.
I am the problem.
What, you're the problem? What, you're the one telling people to buy, or are you the one telling people not to buy?
Half and half, I guess.
Well, at least you're helping someone, but then at the same time, it's always hardest to help ourselves, isn't it?
True.
Yeah, buddy. I'm living that life.
I guess the bottom line is I own too much shit.
Here to that. I'm sitting here staring at my coffee table right now. I have a buddy who just announced she's like, here, have her second kid. And I'm like, on one hand, I was like, congratulations. I'm happy to hear it. On the second hand, I was like, crap, how is she going to afford having 2 kids? That's so much money. On the third hand, I'm like, well, you know, these fucking
you have 3 games. Hands?
Hey, let's not ask questions here, all right? let's just know that there's been some genetic mix-ups that have taken place. And yeah, but it's like weird. Like, I look at all this stuff, I'm like, could I have afforded a kid if I didn't buy all these games? Yeah, but then I have a kid, no game. So it's a tough call. Very tough call. I don't know. I'm sure someone's listening right now. I was like, you son of a bitch. Children are a blessing.
I disagree. I'm happy with cats.
My philosophy is I'm happy with everyone else's children, but don't know if I want my own because I like taking games to kids' houses or say the parents' houses, put the kids on the games, beating their asses, and then pointing at their parents and say, train your kid up so they can take me on later because I just made your kid cry. Or, you know, give them tons of sugar and then walk out the house at 11 o'clock. That's one of my favorites right there. Getting the kids jacked up with sugar and then going home.
We had a gathering at my house a couple of weeks ago for Halloween. My wife's, her niece got married and we had the ceremony at our place and there were some children around and every 5 minutes I'm like, please don't touch that. Please don't touch that. Please don't touch that.
That's the worst of it right there. My niece was visiting me a couple of years ago, particularly, and she came and was like, started picking up my games. Like, you put that shit down. Like, I ain't here to play games, all right? I'll beat your ass, then tell your dad I did it. Don't touch your stuff. Like, I get, like, the most serious face. I'm like, hey, kids will be kids, except not around my stuff. Put your hands off. Such a weird, I'm the best uncle ever, and yet to say, don't touch your shit.
I'm the one who gets paranoid when someone goes to point at something on the TV and they get a little bit too close, like they're going to touch the screen. Oh my god.
They're freaking flimsy, and I was like, they'll touch the screen and they'll fall backwards. Like, that what you doing? Stop that.
I just don't want people like leaving fingerprints on the screen. I just don't fucking touch my TV. Don't. Just stop it.
I don't blame you there.
Bring your finger back a couple of inches. I could see where you're pointing from here. You don't need to get that close.
Today, children, we're going to learn about the fine traits of spatial reasoning.
I want your finger grease jumping across the air onto the screen magically.
Is that a snot trail on my television set? I just picked my nose.
Oh, God.
There you go.
On that note, we should probably talk about games, huh?
Yes, we should. Today, we're going to play Snot Rope Across the Screen, brought to you part by Tubbs.
From snot rockets to crotch rockets, the first game we're here to talk about.
Good segue! That's one of your best ones. Snot
rocket. That is the best. I can't even get through
it. Snot rockets to crotch rockets. What is this?
It's true, though. We're about to talk about bikes.
This is true. Paperboy, developed and published by Midway Entertainment.
No. All right. Let's get it together. Get our shit together. We got games to talk about.
That's right. We're grown men.
We're professionals.
We can do this.
Not rockets.
Rock rockets. Okay. Okay. Here we go. Okay.
First game to talk about tonight is called Ride 3, developed and published by Milestone. It released November 30th on Xbox One, Steam, and PS4 for $49.99. Experience the most complete racing game ever with Ride 3. Race on different tracks all over the world, put your favorite vehicle speed to the test, and have fun by customizing them with the new livery editor. Purnell, tell us about Ride 3.
Ride 3 is a bike riding fan's wet dream. This game is ridiculous. So, to put it in perspective for those who may not be aware, I have never played Ride 1, and I have never played Ride 2. So this was a first for me. And I actually, I know you'll get a chuckle out of this, but I actually kind of went into it thinking, oh, there's going to be some kind of like arcade mode, or this is an arcade racing type game, I would think, just with a lot of...
Oh, no, not at all.
Not even close. If you have that mentality, when you look at this game, change that script up, pick it back, pick the game back up, and come in with the mindset that you're playing Gran Turismo Extreme with bikes. And I said that just because that's the first like connection I ever had to like games that overwhelm me with like realism and options was that. And then Ride 3 is that for motorcycles. But honestly, it's really freaking cool. It just takes some getting used to. So the game starts out with like a nice little sizzle reel saying, welcome to the world of motorcycles. You can ride this thing and when you're done riding it, you can buy another bike and ride some more. And then after this video is over, it takes you into your garage. You can customize your racer. And the customization options aren't, they're decent. They're not extreme or anything. You're not going to come up with a lifelike replica of yourself. And you're not going to have, like, this is my version of Barney Rubble on a motorcycle. Nothing crazy like that. God, I just referenced a 70s cartoon. What the hell's wrong with me? But what you can do is come up with a pretty decent male or female racer, deck them out with some cool clothing, and you can buy more clothing with credits you can earn in the game, and then just kind of set them up and get them ready to race. And there are a variety of races you get to choose from. The career mode is actually kind of nice how they establish it. Normally, a lot of games will just be like, hey, you got to do the intermediate or the expert or the novice, and it might be like, here's 5 courses, knock those out. The way this game does it is it has like a magazine rack theme to it. There's 6 to 7 different levels. Each level has about, say, 8 magazines on it. Each magazine represents a different concept. For example, there's Icons Magazine, which involves, like, you know, talking about, hey, some of the best bikes of the past, present, and future. And then there's, like, Faster, which is all about speed bikes and speed racing. And then there's Tripmaster, my favorite, by the way, which involves racing on real life courses as opposed to, say, like, circuits. This is more like, hey, here's a race. I'm making this one up, but like Rocky, like Yellowstone National Park, something like that. So the idea is that there are multiple volumes of each of these magazines, and they kind of stretch. They're all over the rack, And when you open a magazine up, there are a series of races inside the magazine broken up into pages. So it's like page one is like, you know, this race in Spain at the Louvre de Houphoff. And I just made that up too, because there ain't no way that's a real freaking word. And you then select the track and you attempt to race it. And if you win, you get credits. Oh, I'm sorry, you get stars. And the stars can be utilized to eventually unlock more magazine racks and thereby more magazines and more courses to race, or more areas to race. But regardless of whether you win or lose, you get to earn money, which can be used to buy new bikes and things of that nature, which I appreciate, because you're going to lose a lot. I know I lost a lot, but the money kept coming, which was nice. The races themselves, it's interesting because they're all broken up into a lot of different, a lot of different classifications and like entry requirements. So, for example, some might say you can only race in this on this race if you have a bike that was manufactured in the 1960s or 70s. So you have to actually go to the dealership in game and purchase a bike that fits that criteria. Fortunately, they do. If you try to buy the bike while you're trying to enter that race, they narrow down the options to what you can get. So you're not like browsing the store like, crap, I need to find a bike. It's like, oh, here are the 5 options I can choose from, or the 10 options I can choose from that fit this criteria. So it is a fantastic idea to do that. And I like the fact that it allows you to kind of jump between different types and styles of bikes by virtue of the classifications of, or the qualifications of the races requirements. So I'm like, okay, well, I was riding on these little slow bikes with the intent being to take races that involve tight corners and turns, but this race is all about speed bikes and tearing down the highway. So I get to dance around both of those things instead of like having to wait to unlock the 150 cc's or whatever the heck the game would have. So I did enjoy that. If you are a customization hound, also, this game is insane for that too, because in addition to just buying bikes, and there are a lot of bikes, 27 different bike manufacturers, for example, and I'm pretty sure over 100 bikes because I stopped counting. But as you end up doing that, if you decide, hey, I like my bike, but I want to do a little bit more to it, you can customize everything. And if I'm not getting everything, it's because I don't know enough about bikes to know what I'm missing. But you can customize the brakes, the engine, the gearbox, the wheels. You can make it look pretty with side mirrors and crap. And if you say, for example, want to drill down to the engine, it's not just change the engine. It's do you want to place the air filter, the pistons, the exhaust, the control unit for the damn bike, and everything you change has like stats that it can increase or decrease depending on what you put into the car. And some of the stat changes are so minute or minuscule because they're just air filters and side mirrors. It's there for you if you want to do it. It is very in-depth. I will say driving the bike, controls are very responsive and I like them, honestly. But like I said, it's not an arcade racer, so you might end up playing this game for the first time if you're not used to, you know, bike racing sims, and crashing a lot and saying, this game's stupid. It's not registering what I'm doing. But the reality of it is, in this game, the brakes aren't cosmetic. You have to actually brake. When you go into turns, you have to actually brake, decelerate, and then kind of try to balance your acceleration and deceleration as you go into the turn so that you kind of hug the inner curve. For people like me who suck at the game, I'm not sure whether it was always there or if I only started noticing it after a period of time, but there's actually a line that can show up on the track. And this line made the game a lot easier for me to handle as I was getting my bearings, where it would be blue, indicating that you're going at decent speed, but then it might start to change yellow to red as you are getting to, like, okay, you're taking this turn too fast, you might want to slow down. You see the yellow, it's like, okay, time to slow down. And as it changes color, you kind of get an idea of this is how I'm supposed to accelerate and decelerate to take these turns properly. And eventually, once the line is no longer run amongst you or around you, you've gotten used to the accelerate-decelerate pattern so that you become better at the game naturally. It's kind of nice that it does that, because that was a large part of why I was able to start actually getting second places in races. And yeah, I know you're like, seconds? Why not first? Because I just said it's hard, dumbass! I can't get first place, but due to the way tracks are unlocked, that doesn't matter, because as long as I'm unlocking enough stars, or you're unlocking enough stars, you'll get access to new courses and new magazines. Obviously, there's going to be a ceiling you'll eventually hit, but by that time, hopefully, you've hit the point where you're actually going back with better bikes and more experience and knocking out some of the first places you abandoned ages ago.
Yeah, it kind of sounds like there's some kind of dynamic difficulty in the game. Because I know driving lines like that are fairly common in racing games. They're in Forza. Pretty sure it was in Ride 2 when I covered that one. And it's usually an option that you're able to turn on. I wonder if you sucked so much that it just started enabling some of these things for you.
That's very possible, actually. It wouldn't surprise me if it did, because I know I have that pride. I mean, that's like, don't pick easy, Perno. You're better than that. And clearly, in this case, I was not better than that. I needed easy. Like, I needed easy badly. Like, I need Centrum Silvers. It was, but it worked out well in the fact that it just, I started noticing lines. I put the lines to use, and all of a sudden, my fun level went up. I started enjoying the game a lot more because I was getting assistance and not sucking. So, lesson learned, folks. Don't let your pride get in the way of having fun with a game you paid money for.
Exactly. Speaking of the money, $50 on this one. What do you think of it?
This is an easy recommendation, more so to sim lovers than anything else. But even if you're not a sim fan, speaking from personal experiences, I've experienced it now. If you like motorcycle racing and you're looking for that next big thing, don't let the fact that it's a sim racing feel daunting to you. Take on the challenge of a new style of racing game and maybe get your chops wet, because as you get better, the speed will come with you being better at the game. So just dive in and have fun.
Awesome. Yeah, I know the first time I played the original Ride, I was all over the course. I wasn't having fun with it. When I reviewed Ride 2, I obviously had to put more time into it, and I went in kind of with a negative mindset right off the bat, and it turned me around right away. It was so well done. So I am eager to pick up Ride 3 and pick up my career where I left it off.
I'll tell you one thing that messes with me in these kinds of games, though. It's not a knock towards this game in particular or anything, really. It's just a thought. And that's that I notice all these types of games will always have nice music that only plays in the menus. And then when you get to the race, and I know motorcycles have radios on them, so it's not like they couldn't do it. You get to the race, it's just like, it's just bike sounds. There is no option to jack some turn some music on. Like, I don't know, listen to some, I don't know, Motorhead, I don't know, some random music while you're riding your bike around. Heck, it just seems like it would make sense, but it never happens.
Yeah, I wish more racing games had music during the races, but it's just races could get so long they worry about repetition. Who knows?
Yeah, but then that's why the radio is the perfect solution. You're like, hey, just throw some music on your drift. We have our canned music, but then you can also throw your own music on there and just set the radio station and cruise.
I don't know.
We're forward thinkers, Joe. We're just, the world's not ready for us and our radio.
Shit. Anyway, moving on. Next game to talk about is called I Am the Hero, developed by Crazy Ant, published by Rattleaka Games. Released November 27th on PS4 and Vita, November 30th on the Switch for $9.99, previously on Xbox One. I Am the Hero is a pixel art beat-em-up fighting game that tells the story of a hero with a glorious but mysterious past. Is he the hero he thinks he is, or is there another side to this legendary figure? Purnell, give us the answers.
I'm still just trying to figure out. So did you just say what I think you said? I'm the hero?
I am the hero.
I'm the hero? I had no idea.
No, I am the hero, not you. I am.
Oh, damn it. That's not funny.
Okay, you're the hero.
All right, that's better. Now I feel confident enough to give this review. So, I Am the Hero is... Okay, remember last week when... I'm pretty sure it was last week I reviewed Coffee Crisis, and one of my concerns was that I never felt like I was hitting dudes when I was hitting them, and they would just come whiff on me. I didn't have that problem with this game, and it did wonders for my enjoyment of the title. This game is a lot of fun, and it was not what I was expecting it to be. You are pretty much a guy. The game kind of tells you, like, he's like a guy who goes between like different time periods as a hero. Like, I guess he's like a heroic entity or whatever, and he just does heroic things. And this is the story of him taking down some random evil corporation. And the dialogue has not typos, but there's like some English strewn about in there, here and there, and whatnot. But once the fists start to fly, you seriously do not even care anymore, because this game gets down and dirty. So it's a side scroller, but it kind of has like a weird angle to it. So it's almost like you're slightly running to the right and towards the screen. And as you come across enemies, you're pretty much going, you know, left to right, no like duck and rolls or anything like that going in and out of the screen or nothing, just left and right. And you have a punch button and a kick button. And as you do that, it also has like a sort of Smash Brothers-esque modifier to the moves, where you can press up in the button to do an attack, down on the button to do an attack, and left and right to do an attack with the buttons. There's also an EX move set you can do, where you can like hit, do like a kind of like a quarter circle punch motion, for example, and you'll like use up part of your energy gauge to do a super move on enemies. Foes will come at you in waves. Starts out pretty easy, where you'll have like a couple like KGB-esque looking guys in suits who are coming at you, say, "Hey, we gotta clear this hospital out," and they start fighting you, and then they have like a gun that has that shoots a punching glove at you, which is kind of funny, but I love it. And then as you get further into the game, you start coming across new enemies that are sort of introduced like bosses, where they'll have dialogue and everything, and then you kick the tar out of them with their waves of minions and stuff. And then they'll become normal enemies in the rest of the game, which I like. I like when games do that. And as a result of that, the battles start to become very manic. I mean, you're fighting... My favorite enemy is a rapper enemy. And he kind of walks around with the chains and stuff, and he starts talking, and then, like, rap lyrics will shoot across the screen. Or they'll come from the top to the bottom of the screen and crush you. And you can hit them back at them. That's the best part. You can punch the words and they'll go back and hit them. And when he was introduced as a mini boss character, he was annoying, but he was beatable because, again, it was just him and maybe like one or two minions that was backing him up. But once he becomes a normal mob enemy, along with all the other enemies, he's like a long distance attacker who will just rap in the background while you're trying to fight these guys in front. And all of a sudden words are coming at you like, shit, you can't dodge it. And it takes you out. But it's awesome because it makes you adapt. And every time you beat a stage, you get the choice of whether or not you want to unlock a new EX move or if you want to unlock a character. And characters that you unlock are any of the enemies you fought in the game so far. And what ends up happening is they become a tag-in character. You can choose one enemy type per playthrough. And when you hit the trigger button, you'll swap out your main guy for the enemy character. He doesn't get EX skill unlocks or anything. It's just whatever moves the game has programmed for him. But it's still kind of cool to be like, all right, I need to take a breather from my dude until I get some hit points. Let's bring in the sub enemy and see what he can do for me. And it's actually a lot of fun. It's very frantic, very challenging even, too. And I will say the only complaint I really found myself having for the game, though it may be minor depending, is that transition from the air to the ground in combat isn't very fluid when you press jump. So, if let's say you knock a guy in the air with your launch punch, uppercut, and you want to chase after him, if you jump, you're not really going to do that. Because the guy has to kind of do like a little squat, and then he jumps in the air. By then, the guy's already coming down from the ground, or coming down from the sky. But what you can do, one of your modified kick moves is like a jump launch, where you'll like a jump chase, where you'll chase after the guy with a kick, and then you'll keep punching him there if you continue the combo. And then you can do like, heck, your satellite crusher EX move and do like a special move and slam the guy back into the ground. It's very fluid and fun combat. Oh, I gotta mention this. This is the most important thing. That OST is beast.
Yeah.
I have been listening to it at work on YouTube. It is good. It is good music. And I could easily recommend the game for that alone.
Well, then $10 on it. What is your official verdict?
Oh, God, if you like beat-em-ups, you should buy this game. This is an easy, easy sale, especially at 10 bones. By the time you get tired of it, you'll have definitely gotten $10 worth out of it.
Sounds good.
It is! And I think, I'm not sure if it'll be this by the time the episode comes up, but I think it's like still like 10% off on like the Switch.
It might be. I have no clue. Sales, mentioning sales on this show is such a bad idea because of, you know, we record one day, it releases another day. The sale might be up by then.
True, but by then they're already on the store. They kind of have to buy it at that point because, you know, you're already there. The button's just staring you in the face.
What's another dollar? Just buy the damn thing.
Pretty much. That really is all you're getting at 10% off. It's like a buck.
I mean, come on, you cheap bastards.
Well, I am a cheap bastard. I'm not going to deny that.
Next game to talk about is a preview of Demon's Tilt, developed by WizenWar, published by Flarb LLC, releasing, quote, when it's ready on Steam. Turbocharged Pinball returns, now with bigger sprites, more baddies, more secrets, and more bullets. Demon's Tilt pushes the limits of video pinball genre with shmup and hack and slash elements. If you didn't hear our interview about the game 2 episodes ago. You should go back and listen to that. But for now, Purnell, what did you think of Demon's Tilt?
I freaking loved it. I loved the living daylights out of this game. This has been a great episode for reviews for me. I just want to point that out. Demon's Tilt is legit. To get some context on this saucy sandwich, if you are familiar with an old classic called Devil's Crush, this game was pretty much made with that as an inspired by that. I'm not going to say it's like a carbon copy, because that'd be a disservice for Demon's Tilt and just a dick move. But it is definitely inspired by it, and it shows in spades and like some of the obstacles the pinball course has in mind for you. But once you get past the inspiration, what you have left is a brand new game. And this game involves a 3-level massive pinball table that involves no like screen transitions. And what I mean by that is there are some pinball games where you'll be on one screen, and when you launch the ball off, the game will transition to the next screen and you'll play in there and then so on and so forth. This is all one table that scrolls up and down as the ball is moving around. And there are a plethora of obstacles for you to deal with and hit. As you launch balls, instead of it going through, like, say, a ball feeder and launching up to, like, the launch shaft and out, it actually enters a warp zone. And then the warp zone, I guess, depending on how hard you hit the ball, the warp port, it determines what warp portal the ball will come out of and start bouncing around. There is, from the very start, a lot of chaos on this screen. You have obstacles that evolve as you whack and break them, such as, let's say, there's like a priestess, a woman's face who's like a priestess who's in the center of the table. And as you do damage to the face and launch the ball into like her crown, her face starts to shatter and it starts to say weird words. And things just happen till eventually all hell breaks loose. You get reverse priestess or whatever that is. And fireballs are shooting out everywhere. And the screen's changing colors. And then possibly multi-ball comes out. And that's crazy, too, because, again,
multi-ball in this game, holy shit.
Multi-ball in this game, I have yet to do well with it, because it is hard. Because, again, the screen does not, it's the entire table at once, and it just kind of pans out if there's a ball further off the screen or something. But ultimately, you're managing all these balls at once. There's tons of manicness going on. Bullets are getting shot, because enemies do shoot bullets when they start getting crazy. And the bullets don't hurt the pinball, but when the pinball hits the bullets, you break them and get points, and it results in your ball ricocheting in places. So it gets kind of crazy when you've got bullet hell streams coming at you, and your pinball is bouncing off of all the bullets, doing things and earning you points. it gets insane, but I loved every freaking minute of it, and I actually have been having a good time trying to hit high score notes to a really nice track of music. It doesn't have a lot of music in it. It'll have like that one track that plays, but when things happen, like once you start unlocking events and stuff like that, the music will change to accommodate the events that you unlock. And the events kind of come based off of a series of, I guess, goals or tasks that show up on the right side of the screen that spell words. And every time you do the action that is under the word, one of the letters will light up. And once you fill the entire word, something will get triggered. Like it might say, I don't know. I think I can't remember what the word was, but the action was send the ball up the right high priestess ramp. So if you do that like 6 times, boom, you fulfilled that condition and something crazy happens. And there, like I said, there's a lot that's happening on this table. There's no subtables, which does make me sad, but even without the subtables, there's just genuinely a lot going on with this game. And if you're really into the idea of trying to get a high score, you will be engaged. I mean, because think about it for a second. You know how pinball, like real pinball, I mean, the table in real pinball isn't changing and evolving and like, okay, warp zone, and now you're in a brand new pool table, or pinball table. And this game is the same way, but there's a lot happening to the thing. Like, you break the one thing, like you break the wizard, and all of a sudden you have a skeleton army. You got to break the skeleton army down. And then you get this weird homunculus. I don't know what the hell that thing is, but it's like a bunch of gooey faces. I never broke the gooey faces before dying, because stress is always a factor in this game, too.
I broke 2 of them.
You broke 2 of them? That's more than I ever freaking took care of. My magic was the High Priestess, but I never got to the homuncula. But I tore that High Priestess up to the point where her eyes were like changing colors and mess. It was weird. But nice. It's a great game. I have been enjoying the living daylights out of this. I won it on the Switch yesterday because this game will be perfect on the Switch held sideways. It's just ridiculous. I want this thing there. But if it's, but the thing is, we don't know if it's coming to the Switch, and we do know it's coming to Steam. And I implore you, when it comes to Steam, you need to buy this game. How serious am I about this? I was going to buy this myself before even inquiring about the review. Me buying it, or me trying to get it, was why I inquired about the review, and it sold me. I might buy for another friend of mine who can't afford it.
There you go. Pass it on.
As that buck is just is that good, and it makes it more appealing to do it for him, because, again, he's never even played Devil's Crust, so he doesn't know what the hubbub is about. So I'm like, well, here's this guy's take on it, and it's a freaking good take on it, so I want you to try it and tell me what you think. So we'll see what that friend says.
Awesome. Well, there's no price on this one, so the only thing I could ask is, when it releases, is this something worth checking out?
Oh, yes. And the thing about it is, keeping in mind, his release date is when it's ready. I have no idea what the hell he's still trying to get done, because from where I stand, this game is ready to be played. So I'm expecting it to be even better than this when it comes out, and I would buy it right now.
So, Adam, if you're listening, just release the goddamn game already.
Yeah, I mean, people do Steam Early Access on a regular basis, releasing definitely incomplete games, like clearly incomplete games at a cost. Your game, from what I can tell, is pretty done. Everything else you're doing at this point is just improving it, which is good, but that's patch-worthy.
Well, you got one last game to talk about. That is called Gem Crash, developed and published by Double Drive, released November 22nd on the Switch for $5.99. A brick breaker game with a unique twist, with 360 degrees of potential moves. Destroy the gems scattered throughout the level. Pernell, what is Gem Crash?
Well, hearing that price tag made me, it kind of changed my review on the game. I'm glad to hear that, and I'll tell you why. So,
you could always ask me ahead of time, hey, what's the price on it?
I can't, because I feel like I need to give it the review despite the price, and then the price later can make you, okay, that makes sense, because sometimes I'll play, you know, I might play the game and just say, this game is a piece of crap, and then they'll tell me the price, like, I don't care, it's still a piece of crap. But in the case of this game, it is not crap. I was just really concerned about what the price would be because of what's in it. So what is in Gem Crash? What is it? Crashing gems.
Cool. So what do you think of it?
So if you're familiar with Breakout, everyone who's listening to this show right now should totally be familiar with Breakout. It's a classic arcade phenomenon involving a bar that reflects a ball into bricks. Well, in this game, there is no bar. Is the entire stage itself. The outer rim of the level rotates. And depending on the level, there are other areas inside the stage that will also rotate based on what you do with the thumbstick, tilting it left or right. And there's a ball that will bounce off the edges of the maps into various gems. Tiny white gems are just kind of tiny obstacles. And as you hit them, you kind of break through them. There are purple gems that when you crash into those and break those, you unlock another ball, which will also bounce around the stage, kind of like multi-ball and breakout, or pinball. So as you're breaking gems, you're getting more gem points, and your goal before the time runs up is to get as high a score as possible on the stage. The best way to get said high score is to break gems of the small white variety, or the purple ones to unlock gems, or some of the crash break gems that are just there to be like bigger obstacles, but also worth more points. But then nestled in each side, in each stage, is something called a prism gem. Prism gems are typically pretty large. They're stationary, and they're usually in the most hard to reach spot on the map. But if you can get a ball inside to break that gem, you go into fever mode. And fever mode is another larger gem shows up in the center of the map, and all the stages, physical obstacles disappear. And for a short period of time, your balls get faster, and they unlock, I guess, new powers based on if you bought them, which I'll get to shortly, which will then allow you to hopefully attempt to smash the bonus gem to get bonus points at the end of the level. Every time you beat a stage, you will get a score tally. Score tally is based on how many gems you smashed and if you were able to break the bonus gem. Depending on your score, you will get experience points, which will allow you to level up and eventually unlock new stages in the game. In addition to that, the total number of gems you break allows you to, are able to be spent at a like ball customization store, which will allow you to upgrade your ball in six different ways. Power, speed, penetration, they all pretty much do what they sound like. And there's three other things that will unlock that are all based around when you go into fever mode. And they're called explosion, increase, and area attack. So when you go on the field, remember I said that the ball gets faster?
Mm-hmm.
In addition to that, any of those abilities you unlocked will activate. So explosion will cause like a slight burst of energy to blast up whenever the ball hits a gym. Area attack will expand that blast radius to hit more around it. And ultimately, it just makes it a lot easier to break those bonus gems. So you're going to ultimately be trying to unlock, get more points to upgrade your ball, to eventually do more damage, to get more points on stages, to get a better ball, wash, rinse, repeat. Now, the other level up component, aside from leveling up the ball, is, again, I mentioned earlier, leveling up to unlock new stages. Unfortunately, there's only 5 stages in the game. So you'll be doing the same levels quite a bit over and over again. But the question becomes at that point whether or not the idea of doing stages over and over again appeals to you for high scores, high score tags. Because if that is the case and that does appeal to you, then you'll be doing this a lot and it won't faze you because you'll be happy to see your score go up as you unlock new things on your bowl. However, if you're the type of person who feels as though they need a constant string of new things to unlock and do, like say stage 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 up through 50 or whatever, then you do run the potential risk of getting tired of this game. But you mentioned the $5.99 price tag, mm-hmm. and that made me feel a little bit better about that because, again, $5.99 is a nice diversion price tag. The one thing I need to mention, though, which could be for better or worse, is that due to the nature of how this game plays, you may feel as though, at least I did, you may feel as though you have less control over the ball than you would like. Because, again, you're rotating the map. You're not moving a paddle and setting up angled hook shots. Yeah. The ball is going to hit the outer ring of the stage, and it's going to go where it's going to go, or ricochet off of where it's going to ricochet off of. And the only real augmentation that you can make use of to kind of aim your shots is every once in a while there might be like a little hook sticking out of the rim of the stage. So if you make the ball hit that hook, it might give it a slight angle instead of just bouncing right off the wall, you know?
Yeah.
But for the most there it's protrusion. There it is. But for the most part, you will feel like you have less control over aiming and directing the ball than you would in the basic breakout game. But I will say I still had once the power started unlocking and the ball started bouncing off all over the place manically, I was having a good time playing this game. It was a pretty fun time. Though, like I said, my concern is that it does run the risk of getting old as you're trying to unlock the new stages.
Well, overall then, $6 on it, what do you think?
I'd say at least a try it to a fuck it, why not? It's not a guaranteed buy because I do feel like you could use more content. But what is there is enjoyable.
Makes sense.
Yeah, you know? And now if the developer is listening, make your game larger. Give me 10 stages instead of 5.
More is always good.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. Especially when you're in this market and the competition is high.
Very true.
Earn my time.
Oh, man. Pernell, it is always a pleasure having you on chatting. Do you have any final thoughts to wrap it up?
Christmas time is coming. Presents on the rise. Don't spend it all on yourself. Who am I kidding? Spend it all on yourself. That's what the deals are for.
All right, next game to talk about is called Crimson Keep, developed by Team Crimson, published by Merge Games. It released November 29th on the Switch and PC for $19.99. Crimson Keep is a first-person action RPG. Descend into an ever-changing labyrinth full of monsters, traps, and treasure. Locate the sunken remains of an ancient castle and cleanse it. The great power you find within could be your only hope of escape. Checking this one out, CJ Greenwood, how are you doing?
I'm doing pretty cool.
You're doing pretty cool.
Yeah, bro. Never heard of that before, brah?
Nah, brah. I haven't heard of
it. Doing pretty dang coal, brah.
Coal? Like burning coal?
No, like our friend.
Oh, like my co-host, Cole.
Well, you know, strong word for her, but yes.
Do you miss that role?
I mean, once in a while, but then I remember, oh, yeah. I don't have to play 70 games a week. And all of a sudden, I feel better again.
Oh, man.
I'm okay with, like, one.
You'll get the itch again. It'll be there. The itching, burning sensation.
Just like heroin, I always want it.
Anyway, what is Crimson Keep?
Oh, yeah, that's right. You already did the review part or the thing.
Yeah, I did the intro. Now it's your turn.
Yeah, okay. Well, basically, actually similar to the game I reviewed, I don't have a sense of time anymore, like a week or two ago, the Dungeon Crawly. This is another game in the same vein of you explore, you go into dungeons, it's all randomly generated, and you basically use hand-to-hand combat to try to kill a bunch of enemies that are super dangerous, and there's permadeath, and it's crazy. Now, what I will say is comparably to the what I would like to call the pinnacle and the standpoint for what all games of this game should be, of this genre, Crypt of the Serpent King. I'll say that last time the game was a little more, a tiny bit more sophisticated. This one, I would say, is among the same vein of sophistication. There isn't a whole lot of actual thought process into this battle system. I mean, there is, at least on the bright side, there's a dodge in this game. It's not just you hit them and then you walk backwards and you dodge. You do actually have a dashing backwards dodge. And you can only use those every so often. You have stamina, so you have to let it rebuild and before you can use it again. But half the time, it feels like the enemy's range is far, much further than it looks. Like, you'll see the animation happen, and it looks like he scratched, like, right in front of him, but he'll still hit you, even though he's, like, a good 5 feet away. And so, I don't quite get how the hitboxes work in this game yet, because they don't. But it's... Other than that, it's actually a lot of fun to play it. It's just, I wish that you couldn't be hit from so far away while looking like you're not being hit at all. It gives you a false idea of like where you should be compared to your enemy that you're facing. So, other than that, like the same strategy applies. You hit them, you dash backwards, then you go up and hit them again, and then you dash backwards, and then you go up and hit them again, and then you dash backwards. Now, they do have something very special in this game.
Let's hear
compared
it.
To that, you have powers, and each class in the game has different types of powers. So if you're like a mage, you might get some magical ability that'll freeze your enemy or whatever. Whereas in this, as the warrior, you're going to get something that like increases the damage that you can put out, or it'll change like the damage of your next melee to like an elemental. So it just kind of changes up the way you play it, and you gotta kind of, you actually have different classes that change the way the game plays. There's even a third class that's by far the best class, super overpowered, and that is the bum.
The bum?
Yes. He has half the health, does less damage, and is overall shittier in every way. You don't level up, you don't have it, so you can't get any new abilities, you just have a weapon, and you have to try to survive with less health and everything. And by far the most overpowerful character in the game. And I'm being very sarcastic about that. He sucks. But I did enjoy playing with him, and he's actually the furthest I got in the game. And I don't know why that's the case. It might be because I found good equipment finally, unlike every other run where I kept getting shit on. But in this one, I actually found like actual armor that added 30 HP to my chest and like 20 HP to my helmet. I was like, oh my god, imagine if I was playing as another class. I would have did great. But the fact of the matter is, I got squished by I think it might have been the first boss. I don't know. I can't tell. I assume it's the first boss because he was in his own little area. This game's hard. Far harder than I expected to be. And again, the hardness really just applies to the hitboxes and how far away the enemy seems to be versus how far he really is in the game.
Yeah.
But they take so much damage away from you when they hit you that it's almost like you can't get hit or you're gonna die.
Ugh.
Because it's approximately about a third of your health every time you get hit. I mean, give or take some, because you have gear that can raise and lower your HP, so it's all number based. Mm-hmm. And what I found interesting was that at one point I got lowered to one health, and the next time I got hit, it didn't kill me, it just said near death. So I think you have an extra little bit of health to try to help yourself and escape if you can. The reason I actually did so well with the bum was because instead of the way I was playing it where I was killing every single enemy, I said fuck the enemies and I just ran. And I think that actually wound up working out better for me, because I was able to just find loot crates and just punch those up, get some new armor, and just run and try to find the exit. The first level is so confusing because it's caves and everything looks the same.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a little difficult to try to find the exit in that one. But eventually you find it, and then you can drop down and you fight the boss. And the first boss is just a bigger version of an enemy you've already seen in the level. But he was pretty challenging, and he actually had some abilities that the other guys didn't. Like, he was able to do this weird swinging axe thing that like did way more damage than it should have, and also went way further than it should have. But he's a fun boss. He's actually pretty cool. I wound up facing him like 3 or 4 times, never being able to beat him. But he was, I think the design was there. It's just he's incredibly fast, and with the mage character specifically, if you run out of ammo, your only ability then is to hit them with your wand. But naturally, as a stupid pointy stick, it's not going to do that much damage.
Yeah.
And I was trying to like switch through my weapons, but switching through with your weapons on a controller is really difficult. And they, at the time that I played it, it didn't have customizable keys, so I couldn't change it to suit my left-handed play. So I was playing it with a controller, which for the most part was fine, except for the fact that it doesn't translate controller buttons versus keyboard. So in the tutorial, it was telling me to do things on my keyboard, even though I was playing it with a controller. But that's fine. I was able to forgive it, because after a few button presses and experimenting, I figured it out. So it was fine. There's only so many buttons you can press on a controller.
I would imagine on the Switch, all the tutorial stuff is done with the proper buttons, though.
Probably on the Switch, I'd hope. No, it just says press Q.
Yeah.
That'd be funny. No, I'd say I was surprised to find out this was a full release. I did expect this to be more along the lines of an early access, just because of the, again, the hitboxes, as well as the non-customizable keys at the beginning. I thought that this was going to be more along the lines of it's going to get polished up a little more, and I'm sure it will, still with updates. They're not just going to let the game go, because from what I've read, there is customizable keys in the new beta branch version that you can put on Steam, and they give you access to that in the discussion boards. So if you want to play it with customizable keys, you can go in there, and then you could just join the beta.
Oh, nice.
So they are still updating the game. They're going to keep making it. They're going to make it better. And hopefully, I think what could really help this game and make it a lot more fun, even if they don't change the hitboxes that much, is if they include a version or a game mode that isn't permadeath.
Yeah.
Because having that permadeath where everything you have gets lost, you have to restart from the very beginning of the game again, that can kind of ruin it when you're getting killed by stuff that you can't really tell that you should be getting killed by. I think if they allowed a new mode where it was just like, just play through, and it's like bitch mode, where all you do is just play through the game. Just have fun. You can play through it. If you die, you just start back at the beginning of the level, and you lose all the stuff you picked up in the level. That's it.
Yeah.
I think that would be a fun way to allow casual gamers to still enjoy the game. But other than that, I mean, it was a fun game. I like the look of it. I like the aesthetic. I like the level up system and the fact that you have so many different things to choose from. Every time you level up, you have like 3 to 5 choices. So it's pretty cool to have all of those choices. And it's pretty quick to level up. Like, you only have to kill a few enemies before you can level up again. So all that stuff's a lot of fun. It's just there's small things in the game that really bug me and keep this from being a great game.
Well, then overall, $20 on Switch, $15 on Steam. I was wrong. It is $15 on Steam. What do you think? And
currently 15% off on Steam.
Yeah, until, what, like 2 days? So by the time the episode airs, they'll have a day left on sale.
It's 3 days, Joe.
Yeah, and the show comes out on Wednesday, so it'll be a day left.
Well, I mean,
so if you want the sale price, chop, chop.
Yeah, exactly. I'd say on Switch, I'd say try it. On Steam, I'd say more like a recommended try it, just to give it a shot. But because at 15, I think this is a decent game for $15. 20, a bit of a stretch, but then again, on Switch, everything's more expensive. So If you want to be able to play this game while you're taking a shit, then by all means.
You have such a way with words, CJ.
I thought so.
Oh, Lord. CJ, it is always good having you on chatting about this stuff. Do you have any final words on it?
I'm just proud of myself for not fucking up in the beginning of the review and throwing myself off like last time.
All right, moving on. Next game to talk about is called God's Remaster, developed and published by Robot Riot. It released December 4th on Xbox One and Steam for $19.99. Also planned to be coming to the PS4 and the Switch. Join the Nameless Warrior on a dangerous journey through four worlds to defeat the great guardians who have stolen the homes of the gods. As a reward, you will receive immortality and a place in the Eternal Hall of Fame. Checking this one out, presumably from the Hall of Fame, Royal yes. Sefton, how are you doing?
I'm doing okay. How you doing?
I'm doing all right. I'm jealous that you're immortal now.
Well, yeah. I mean, didn't you get the memo? I am a god among men.
So how is God's Remaster?
Well, okay. So a bit of history. Gods was a Bitmap Brothers game that made waves in the early computer game era and hit platforms later. And so it had a very distinct kind of demo scene-y Amiga art style that was just really cool. but it was notorious for being challenging for reasons that modern gamers won't like. And so your character was kind of slow and your play control was super, super exact and unforgiving. That is the primary challenge of the game. And that's not to decry it. I mean, there are certain like play mechanics that we've come to expect from games like the older Castlevanias. You know, you can't just suddenly change your flight path in midair when you take a jump, mm-hmm. stuff like that. Gods kind of takes it one step further, and your character is very meticulous in his motions. And, not only do you commit to your flight paths when you jump, it just feels very sticky and very exact. So when you duck and when you shoot, because you have these like throwing knives and throwing stars and stuff, every millisecond counts, but it doesn't feel fluid. It doesn't feel, natural. It feels just kind of kludgy. And, so, you know, for a game in the early 90s, played on your Amiga or your Atari ST or later on the Genesis or something, I'm sure it was probably something that gamers of that era would tolerate. Well, to their credit, this remaster kept all that. So if you're not expecting that kind of game, this may be a bitter pill to swallow, and it will be, I think, a polarizing effect as far as the gameplay goes. On one hand, you'll have purists that are going to probably think this is perfect, especially because you can toggle between new and old art styles. I'll talk about that in a moment.
I love when games do that.
Yeah, and it's instantaneous. You just click in. I played on Xbox. You just click in the right thumbstick, and it switches between them. And it also changes. I want to say the sound of music changes too. And I kind of derailed myself there.
Sorry.
That's okay. The parenthetical stuff always like that's the penny on the tracks, and my train just goes wherever it wants. but anyway, it's polarizing because you're going to have the purists that are going to say, this is the game I remember, this is the game I want. But it wasn't a really warmly received game when it was originally released. It was a game that was even polarizing then, I think, because just kind of going back through older reviews and such, it really looked like a game that either you thought it was pretty good, maybe rarely thought it was awesome, and then there were people who were like, oh my god, this is not that awesome at all. I didn't expect that from, you know, Bitmap Brothers. It was one of those games that it was easy to hate simply because it was just so challenging. And then I saw a couple folks like, I beat it in a day. Wow, well, more power to you. I couldn't do that. I don't know how you did it. And part of the reason that it can be so difficult, or for reasons that, you know, modern gamer might find pretty arbitrary, it's like you have these seven levers and you have to hit the right combination. One combination gets you through, the other combinations all kill you, and you got to go back and do it again. That sort of thing can be very frustrating for a player, right?
Yeah.
So, you know,
that's not a game that holds your hands.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, you know, if you go in with the expectation that you're looking for some old school brutal challenge, you're probably going to get it. If you're going in expecting something that's more akin to a modern platformer, you're going to probably want to put the controller down before you throw it through your television.
this is definitely a game where you got to know what you're getting into when you're getting into it.
I think so. And you know, if it sounds like I'm saying this is a bad game, I'm not saying it's a bad game at all. I am saying it is definitely a very particular taste or an acquired taste. There are some things I like about it. The opening theme when you first start it up is just fucking awesome. I love the music in the beginning. It's like a trap remix of the original or something. it's hilarious. I just loved it. And the old art style is great. I love that pixel art. You know, most of my before I was much while I was into games early on, I was also into a lot of, you know, Demoscene aesthetic, and Bitmap Brothers games have that, like the cool fonts and the pixel art, it all kind of lines up. But the new art style, a little harder to stomach. It almost seems like it's nostalgic for the late 90s computer graphics renders that just look kind of hokey and shitty. And I'm not trying to bag on him. It's just that, like, your main character looks very muscle bound and everything, but he looks very plasticky. It's almost like a stop motion He-Man or something. Yeah. It's kind of a struggle to really enjoy the new aesthetic, even though I can tell they put a lot of time into it. So I feel bad saying that. But personally, I didn't
mind the new visuals that much. I thought they were fine. I preferred them over the old school visuals just because they were smoother and more fluid.
Yes, that's fair. I actually found myself playing with them about half and half. Like the projectiles looked better, for sure, in the new style, absolutely. But it was just some things where it's like I kind of craved the old school aesthetic more. So it's nice that you can switch instantaneously. I'll say that much. And it's not all bad. You know, like I said, the music was cool. The sound effects were good. Like the death scream is just the stuff of nightmares. I mean, it hits a lot of good aesthetic notes. So I think it was just kind of like the walking animation and stuff looked really kind of funky to me. So, you know, it's a mixed bag, but mostly good. Right.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Overall, $20 on it. What do you think of it?
Try it. I can't give it an overwhelming buy it, partly because for being such a punishing game, I feel like $20, it's almost like, you know, I'll give you $20 bill and you'll go kick my ass for me and then we'll call it a day. It's just that level of difficulty is probably not going to feel very rewarding. And it is a fairly linear game, but it does have some speedrunning features in it that I think will help sell that for the people who are really hardcore. That may be worth their $20. But again, not everybody's cup of tea, so I can't give it a uniform buy it. And there is stuff to like here, so I can't say deny it either. It's just right in the middle.
Sounds good. I personally would love to see this run during like an SGDQ.
Yes, absolutely. I think that would be pretty amusing.
I think that would be awesome to watch. I would love to see someone just blaze through this game at top speed and embarrass me and how poorly I did with the game.
Yeah, it was a struggle for me too, man. I was getting my ass handed to me. And I mean, I grew up on older platformers, but I was like, damn, this is pretty rough.
Yeah, it is a tough one. So be prepared.
Yeah.
Oh, Royal, it is always good having you on chatting. Do you have any final thoughts?
Heaven to Hades.
I like the zipper in the background. All right, moving on, we got Chris Taylor here. Chris, how are you doing?
Hey, doing great.
Are you sure? You sound kind of hesitant on that one.
Yeah, I've been chasing the cat around again.
It's always cat troubles.
Yeah. I mean, one good bit of news is I finally got my my flip grip for the Switch.
Yeah, now boy, I was just about to ask you if you got yours.
Yeah, did you get yours?
Yeah.
It's great, isn't it?
I love the thing. It is so cool.
Yeah, I knew that they put enough work into it that it would be a nice product, but man, it like actually really, it feels great, like to, you know, clip in the controllers and stuff. It like, it's perfect.
It's snug, it's secure, it feels good.
Yeah.
Quality product.
It makes me have to try and figure out how I'm going to control the volume on the thing. I haven't figured it out yet.
Hold like, down from the menu. The home button and volume pops up there.
Oh, okay, cool. Well, now, mystery solved. We've all learned something. Good night, everybody.
I'm sad. I don't think any of your games this week would require a flip grip, though.
No. In fact, I don't even... Well, I just bought the Namco Museum Collection, and I haven't tried it yet, but I feel like some of those are probably going to be able to align vertically, so...
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, I played some of the old stuff.
I played... Punch-Out was the first thing I played with the thing.
Oh, I haven't done that yet. I'm going to do that tonight.
Yeah, boy.
Yeah.
I am so bad at the arcade version of Punch-Out.
Me too, and, you know, I knew this already... You know, because I actually played it on an arcade, and I was bad.
the green wireframe character.
Yeah, it's just mostly that it's just arcade difficult, so, you know.
Pop them quarters in.
Uh-huh.
Anyway, we should probably chat about games, huh?
Oh, yeah, we should chat about current games, not from... Well, actually, I guess one of these isn't current, but okay, anyways. Yes, let's talk about the games that we do a podcast to talk about.
All right, well, the first game you're here to talk about is called Toki, developed by TAD Corporation, published by Microids, released December 4th on the Switch for $29.99. A Retrolector edition is available exclusively at GameStop for $49.99 and includes some cool goodies in there. Toki, the warrior, lived peacefully in the jungle with his sweetheart, Miho. Appearing out of nowhere, the terrifying voodoo sorcerer Vuki Medlo?
I don't know. Sure.
And heinous demon Bashtar kidnap Miho and turn the poor Toki into a chimpanzee. Unfortunately for his sweetheart, he has become a hairy, lethargic ape. Chris, what is Toki?
Lethargic? He seemed pretty motivated to me.
Like, I'm just going after what they tell me, so...
I'm lethargic. I'm the one that was sitting there on the couch, like, sitting there with a blank expression on my face playing a game about an ape. The ape was doing plenty. Okay, so Toki. Yeah, this one, I feel like the explanation for what it is going to be longer than the actual review, but that's not necessarily bad. Okay, so Toki is a game from the 80s. Who cares what year? It's the 80s. And
they're all a blur.
Yeah. It was put out by TAD Entertainment, who you might know from Cabal and some other games that we probably never saw. I don't know. But anyways, it's basically it was really popular at the time. Like, I think it kind of joined in this massive swell of like games starring cavemen and monkeys. Because, you know, as an NES fan, I've definitely gone through many of those in the system's lifespan. So, you know, like Joe and Mac, like, you know, other, you know, prehistoric games of its ilk, it involves, you know, going through stages because your girlfriend got kidnapped and everything is dinosaurs and, you know, monkeys and a caveman type thing. Only in this one, you go from being a caveman to an ape, which is pretty cool, I guess. And yeah, the game got ported to the NES. It's actually one of the rarer NES games that you're likely to find.
Oh, really?
In fact, yeah, it was put out by Taito, and Taito is known for coming out with these low print run games, especially like later in the NES's cycle. I think it was like 91. And so it probably got lost in the mix. And like, it's not even expensive to get nowadays. It's just like, you'll never see it in a store. And then it got ported over to the Genesis, where it got called Toki Going Ape Spit or something like that.
Oh, God.
Yeah. So there's some history for you. And then this port of the game actually started production in 2009. This was going to be a WiiWare game, as well as...
Really?
Yeah, as well as going to be ported on some other systems, and then it became like this Steam Greenlight thing back in, I don't know, 2013 or something. I don't know Steam stuff very well. But it basically kept faltering in some point during the development or publishing process, where it essentially became this, you know, kind of vaporware where, you know, nobody knew if it was actually ever going to come out. And then suddenly, surprise, it came out and, you know, nobody knew it was coming or anything. But here it is on the Switch. So that might answer some questions about, you know, the confused questions of why Toki for people who are fans of old games being remade, of which I am one. And indeed, this game follows the formula that it half follows the formula that I like best. And that is to say, I like really well done reskins of old games that retain the original gameplay. And that's essentially what this is. This is note for note the arcade game, which was pretty faithfully translated to the NES. But the problem is that the NES version, they were like, this arcade version is way too hard, so we're going to add a life bar and let you take more than one hit before you die. This remake made no such accommodation. It basically is like, no, this is the arcade game, so you're just going to die. So the game is essentially a side scroller where your very slow moving chimpanzee, I suppose. I actually thought it was more of a Missing Link kind of thing because, you know, he looks a little bit more humanoid and also likes football. So, but yeah, so you run around or amble around in this game, and your character has, you know, I don't know if he had this when he was a human, but he definitely has it as an ape. He has the ability to spit deadly things, some kind of glowing ball, at enemies to destroy them, and that is basically what the game is. It's the world's slowest run and gun. Essentially, because you shoot all kinds of enemies, you pick up power-ups so that you can shoot like hundreds of bullets in a swirling arc, or, you know, like a kind of double helix sort of, you know, something you would normally see in a shmup.
Yeah.
But yeah, and then you basically get through these levels and try to overcome the obstacles. The first level is going to test your mettle in that you basically have to fight a tower, like this moving contraption that has all kinds of faces on the side that are spitting out stuff at you. It's kind of like a statue spaceship looking weird thing. And you have to like shoot the faces going all the way up until you finally shoot out the pilots. And that's within like the first couple of minutes of the game. And you might actually game over there.
Damn.
So yeah, the game is real tough, but this reskin of it, for fans of, you know, hard platforming arcades, they basically redid the sprites in HD, and they all have that kind of hand-painted look. Really, really good quality. The soundtrack's been remade to be this sort of, you know, real instruments kind of, you know, I don't want to say orchestral, but 'cause that might belie the simplicity of the soundtrack, but still, they completely remade the soundtrack from, you know, the ground up, but it retains some good tunes. And actually on the NES, it had good tunes. The arcade version, I don't know, I always prefer NES stuff because I was a stay-at-home kid. But yeah, most of all, though, the game does retain the difficulty of its arcade thing, and it's not the kind of arcade game that you can, you know, use rich kid strats and just dump quarters into. You are given a set amount of lives and a set amount of continues.
Oh.
Yeah, I think it's 9 and 9 on the easiest setting. I don't actually remember at this point, but so the extra options that you get for this game in the in-game menu is that you have the normal mode. And then I want to say it's like 3 difficulties above the normal mode. And the normal mode is the arcade game. So I think they make the enemies harder to kill and reduce the amount of... they definitely reduce the amount of lives and continues that you have. But, you know, I was not brave enough to even try this on the highest difficulty setting. Maybe I should have. But maybe the game actually just reaches up and slaps you.
Maybe.
But,
Maybe.
Maybe. So yeah, that's basically, apart from that though, I mean, the reason why the game is so difficult partially is because it's only about 6 stages, but they vary pretty well. But I'm not going to sit here and pretend that I got to all of them. So I had to cheat a little and look at some pictures. But apart from that, the game looks great. It feels great. It, you know, feels like an arcade game. You know, of course, because I'm such a fan of this, I wish it would have had a retro mode of some kind to show people what they're originally dealing with. But I mean, there's nothing that says developers have to do that. So
Then overall, $30 on this one. What do you think of it?
So $30 is an that's obviously a price for a game that has a physical release, which this one does, right? You said at the top of the review. Yeah. So, definitely if you're looking to add this, this game to your, retro remakes collection, it's a worthy, addition, something like, Monster Boy or, the Wonder Boy game on, PS4, I guess it was. Did I say Monster Boy? I meant to say Wonder Boy. And Wonder Boy in Monster World. Also just the original Wonder Boy. It's like, it's that vintage of like really tough as nails arcade action, but beautifully remade. So if that's interesting to you, then definitely this is a good remake. So I would recommend picking it up. The other thing I would say is that just pick it up just to support the fact that this game really shouldn't exist. Just the fact that, like, 20 years, I'd say more than 20 years after the game's initial run, it gets almost remade on doomed systems and then, like, spent a further, 9 years out of the public eye, and now it's here. So
support the fact that it exists.
Just the fact that it exists means that you should at least take a good look at this one and see if this is something you might enjoy playing. I enjoy it for sure. This is one I'm going to be, beating my head against until I finally get through it. Cause I'm just not that good at arcade games that nice. I can't just, buy my way through, but it's a good game. So, definitely look at it. And I would say it's worth picking up if it looks good to you.
Awesome. Sounds good. Next game to talk about is called Demetrios, the Big Cynical Adventure, developed and published by Cowcat, released December 3rd on the Switch for $9.99. I'm just quoting the Steam write-up for this one that says, quote, "The Journey of an Idiot, 8 to 12 hours of fun." Chris, how was The Journey of an Idiot?
Still ongoing. No. Yeah, so this game, I actually forgot to check and see what the where Cowcat is from. They're not an American developer, right?
I don't recall exactly where he's from.
It's time. They are okay. They're located in France. That actually
I was gonna makes say a lot France because it's Fabrice.
Yeah, and the game is based in France. So, but you actually play the part of a guy called Bjorn. So I guess maybe his origins are from a different place. And yeah, so he's at one, at both times a complete slob and also an antiques dealer, which is interesting to me because if you're an antiques dealer in France, that takes a lot more effort than I think this guy's willing to put into anything. But that does provide one with the MacGuffin that one has to seek out because yeah, he is robbed in the middle of the night and knocked out and wakes up in his apartment with, not very much taken, but he does notice that part of one of his antiques is missing. Dun, dun, dun.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. So you're, of course, this is a point and click puzzle game. And so you are basically tasked with, seeking out everything that you can and, moving on to the next scene where you find everything you can. And, the actual presentation of this one is interesting, though, because there really aren't too many ways that you can interact with something. Basically, if you just highlight the correct thing, like everything else will automatically happen. So if you find an item that you're supposed to pick up, then as soon as you look at it, he'll pick it up. otherwise, you're just looking at, just reading the flavor text, which is, of course, our Bjorn. He's kind of an everyman and definitely a cynic. He usually has something, anything from humorous to downright bizarre, as far as his observations go, then he will say them. Like one of the more bizarre jokes to me was that when you look at a roll of toilet paper, he's like, "Why do they even call it toilet paper? You don't make a toilet out of it." And
womp,
I'm like,
womp.
Yeah, it's like, I get it. That's constructed like a joke, but what, how do you not understand toilet paper? And what?
Well, this is the journey of an idiot.
it is the journey of an idiot. And, you know, they do say in the title that it's cynical. And I'm just like, well, that is very cynical if you're making observations about toilet paper there, Jerry Seinfeld.
Just to show what an idiot he is, when I played this on the Xbox version, one of my game overs was because I took a shit on a photocopier.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah.
The first thing I did was get him killed by sticking my finger in a light socket.
Nice.
And I do like that in this game, is that it will record the amount of deaths that you have and why you died, but it's just kind of like another thing to collect almost.
Yeah, there's in the Xbox and I believe PlayStation versions, one of the achievements and trophies is to collect all the deaths.
Yeah, so you can kill this guy any which way and the game will reward you for it in its own special way. Also, I noticed that this game has an option right at the top of the game where you can opt to reduce or completely eliminate the toilet humor, quote unquote. I don't know what happens when you do those because I obviously opted to have it completely on.
God damn right.
And I don't know why you would do otherwise.
I know it removes some of the options in the game.
Okay.
So if you're trying to get all the deaths and all of the experiences in the game, you need to have it on.
Okay, so this is just for people of highbrow tastes who are who don't actually care about completing the game. Gotcha. That's not my kind of journey. So yeah, like basically you just go through the game and you know, it has you combining items. It seems to be, I haven't yet run into a typical point and click like super absurd item combination. Maybe there's one later, but it's just like, you know, you combine items in order to use them to solve puzzles and etc. It was actually kind of refreshing that things in this game actually make sense. Like, you want to see in the dark, you have to use a flashlight. The flashlight doesn't have any batteries, so you find batteries in a secret drawer, hidden in something that we dare not talk about. And then you put those batteries into the flashlight, and now you have light.
Yay.
Like, I just got through completing the Discworld game for the PlayStation, which is notorious for its absurd puzzles. And, like, we had to use three different FAQs, and two different FAQs and the actual printed official guide to try and figure out how to play through this game. So Demetrios the Big Cynical Adventure ended up being a kind of breath of fresh farty air for somebody who has just recently become very cynical about adventure games. So yeah,
nice. So $10 on this one, what do you think of it?
Yeah, $10 is always I think a reasonable price for a good point and click, and this one, I mean, let's face it, if you don't like toilet humor, you should maybe just avoid the game altogether.
And this show, really.
Yeah, and this show. So if you're listening to this show, this is the kind of point-and-click adventure you've been waiting for.
It's the journey of an idiot from a podcast from idiots.
Yeah, I mean, it's... I felt myself, like, really relating to the guy. So I think... And, you know, I wanted to look at everything because I wanted to see what he said, even if it is kind of a... some of it seemed to have gotten a little lost in translation, but I find that even more charming because I just imagine the guy has like a different accent or something, and you know, that's just fine. Yeah, it's an interesting adventure. You know, it's not over the top goofy. It's just, you know, it's fun and it's kind of interesting to play through as a you know, as a big bro that doesn't actually care about anything but does kind of want to figure out what's at the bottom of his apartment getting robbed.
Awesome.
Yeah,
one last game to talk about tonight, that is called 99 Vitas, developed and published by Cubite Interactive, released November 27th on the Switch for $9.99. 99 Vitas is a brawler set in a contemporary world that pays tribute to both the classic and the new in the gaming industry. Brought to you in 16-bit pixelated glory, chock full of references to not only gaming, but 80s and 90s pop culture, 99 Vitas takes full advantage of modern-era gameplay mechanics, making it the best of both worlds. Chris, what is 99 Vitas?
99 Vitas. I was actually a little bit wary of this one at first. I was like, I don't know if I want to actually use a brawler and references to things in the past. I don't know. Just because... like the exact the description that you read off actually sounds like the Scott Pilgrim game to me. Like you could just change a couple of words and you would be talking about that old you know, brawler based on Scott Pilgrim, which is one in a long line of things I don't like, and that is to say stuff that just panders to people our age by reminding us of stuff that actually we're still currently enjoying.
I like it's being like, pandered to.
That's fine. That's fine. I'm a little more cynical about it, I guess.
Based so on the last was, game.
Yeah, exactly. So I was just kind of like, oh, I don't know. Let's see how this goes. And I was actually very pleasantly surprised that this game is actually super good.
Yes.
Not to spoil the end of the review. But yeah, so 99 Vitas, you basically, you know, there's a MacGuffin of some kind. It's called 99 Vitas. It gives you the power of having 99 lives, which is a funny throwback to, like, you know, Game Genie, basically. Start the game with 99 lives. And so you pick one of your four adventurers. Each is a dude that represents some element and has a different combination of speed and skill. But, oh, wait, there's actually ladies in this game, too, two of which you can select right off the bat. And then it appears that there's a whole plethora of characters that you can then choose who are obscured in silhouette, of course, until you beat the game, I imagine. So yeah, there's actually a variety of characters to play. I was a little worried that it was just going to be four dudes who look like people that, like, it might have been the developers putting themselves in the game. Like, because they look so average, except for the one who's part cat or some kind of animal, I assume. And so I played as the female version of him for the most part, and then I swapped around characters, but I got the furthest with her. So, yeah, you get into this game, and it's very much modeled after a kind of Streets of Rage and Final Fight style, where you move around on a slanted plane and, you know, beat up enemies, and then you use a separate button to jump, so not something like Double Dragon or anything like that, even though it says it's based on that. And you can pick up weapons if they get dropped. And what this game adds is a combo system not unlike something like River City Ransom, where, you know, you do punch and then start mashing the kick button and you'll throw out a combo. And usually in the combos, it incorporates the character's elemental power, so that's really nice and provides kind of a knockback. There's also, and I don't know why more brawlers don't do this, there is a specific free-to-use move that helps you get out of situations where you're surrounded. Sorry. You just push the right trigger button and, you know, your character uses their element in some way that actually knocks back a lot of the characters when they get too, you know, too close for comfort. So I really appreciated that. And then, of course, there is the, you have a bar that you can build up by defeating enemies that, you know, once it gets up to the halfway point or the full point, you can then trigger it with the A button and it will send in a screen clearing super move, which is, of course, a reference to or inspired by Golden Axe, because that was always one of the best parts of Golden Axe was summoning that, you know, Grandpa Skull or some other kind of screen clearing, you know, entity.
Best part was seeing what the ability was based on how many magic things you had.
Yeah, exactly. And this game sort of calls on to that because the halfway summon and the full bar summon are different things, and they're extremely useful in boss fights. They really clear out that that life bar. And of course the bosses in the game are, you know, big and bad. I really like the first boss in the arcade and story mode, and that is to say he's what is his name? Bob the owner or something, but clearly his name is actually Roberto, and he comes out and he's a regular guy, and he's, you know, just kind of big and shirtless for some reason, and he comes out and then turns into like an 8-bit creature that you must fight. And I just kind of like that for no reason at all, he powers up by turning 8-bit. That's not really a direct reference to anything, so that's why I like it. It's just kind of absurd.
Absurd is good.
Yeah, and that's what I like about this game, is that it's not pandery at all. It has things that remind you of other things, and it definitely speaks to people who played, you know, a lot of brawlers back in the 80s and early 90s, but it is its own thing, and it is kind of an exercise in this sort of absurdity that you kind of really want to see what else is out there and, you know, experience it more. And the controls on it are super tight. I really like the controls. Your characters move nice and fast. You know, you can really pull off some good brawler moves. You know, you're not slowed down or anything like, you know, in... like in the classic games, like it's actually got more modern gameplay. And yeah, it's just got a lot of things that I like in it. And I really want to get through it now and like unlock all the characters. And then, of course, it has a whole bunch of modes, including an online mode, which I haven't used yet because it requires the Nintendo membership subscription.
Oh, you don't have that?
No, I don't have that yet. I'm going to get it. I just started a new job, so I didn't want to commit to it just quite yet.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
Well, overall, $10 on 99 Vitas. What do you think of it?
Yeah, $10 is a good price for it. I don't know much about the developer. They definitely are not American, and I did notice they're Brazil. They're from Brazil, which is interesting to me because, you know, Brazilians, as I understand, are generally obsessed with Sega stuff. And this game does kind of play like a Super Sega game. So I like that about it. So if you are a fan of, like I said, Streets of Rage or, like, you know, any of those good Sega brawlers or arcade brawlers in general, this is definitely a worthy addition to your repertoire.
Awesome. Sounds good. Yeah. All right. Well, that is it for this episode. Chris, thank you as always for coming on and doing your thing. Thanks to Royal and CJ and Purnell as well for coming on, doing their thing as well. I'm actually going to announce music on this episode. We got three tracks from Mantra Sound off of their debut album, Joystuck, released on Bandcamp through Materia Collective. So you should check that out. Gives me a one-ups kind of vibe. I really dig it.
Awesome. I'll check that out.
I will have to let you check it out, indeed. So, Chris, do you have any final words to end this show?
No.
Bye.